This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Trained to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Trained to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Orioles lose 2-3 in Kansas City over the weekend. Feast or famine offense coming through again as they scored 8 runs on Saturday, combined for 3 on Friday and Sunday. And I think, and I don't want to speak for you guys, but the main takeaway is just the fundamentals are, they're not a good defensive baseball team. They're not a high IQ baseball team. They're a team that doesn't do their pitchers any favors whatsoever.
No, and it's not a new development. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I love the fact that they're 24th in Major League Baseball in walk rate, or I love the fact that, you know, they've played, what, 9 games, and in 5 of them?
10.
They haven't scored more than 4 runs?
No, 9 games.
Played 9 games.
They've scored
8 or more in 4, and then in the other 5, they scored 4 or less, and in 4 of those 5, they've scored 2 or less.
In their 6 losses, they've scored 10 runs. In their 4 wins, they've scored 37.
And the wins, they hit a whole bunch of home runs, and then this week they didn't hit homers, so they didn't win. And that's been going on since, you know, late May of last year.
I was right the first time, 10 games, yes.
All that stuff's not great, but I don't have a stomach. If you're going to make me sit through 110 lost seasons where Dwight Smith can't catch fly balls and DJ Stewart can't catch fly balls and Pedro Severino can't catch, so a guy loses a perfect game, and... You know, like,
it's amazing.
I'm watching shortstops.
Now,
ask Palm about it.
I hear you.
Asking shortstops who can't even play second base to play short, and I'm watching, you know, Rugi Odor at second, like
Spencer Watkins,
knuckleball pitchers, like, you know, and I was here for it, and I was up for it, and these guys were the right guys for a job at a time to a point, but like, if you're enduring all that, and then we're on the other. Going on 2 years removed from a 100-win season, and I'm watching O'Neill in the role of Dwight Smith, and I'm watching, you know, Heston and Laureano in left field, you know, in the role of DJ Stewart. Like, I just can't do it. I'm over it.
You're going to
You
got to
at least catch the ball. You got it. Like, the second baseman doesn't know when to be on the bag for a double play. The right fielder doesn't know who the cutoff guy is, doesn't know what base to throw it to. The center fielder can't catch a line drive that hits his glove. Like,
and overruns another one.
The catcher can't control the run game. And you know what? They don't systematically, categorically care about holding runners. Like, the stuff that they just organizationally, that would have Earl Weaver turning in his grave, they clearly don't give a damn about, because it's years with some of this stuff. And they don't fix it. They saw what it looked like with an ace. Nah, we don't need an ace. We just get a bunch of guys who give up a ton of contact, and we'll play bad fielding teams behind them, but we'll Weaver our way with 3-run home runs to victories 3 times a week. Like, I don't find that appealing. I was much more captivated by how the Royals hustled, how the Royals stole bases, how the Royals made small ball work for them in that ballpark, how the Royals caught the ball, how the Royals communicated, how the Royals had energy, how the Royals seemingly had a plan, how the Royals picked themselves up when it's crappy weather for everybody. I haven't seen a lot of verve and pulse from this team in a while. Maybe it's because the GM doesn't have a whole lot of that stuff. They don't seem to be that emotional. He's not that emotional. And they've got some major flaws, but the low IQ baseball, when you're selling this as the best version of your 6 or 7 years on the job, it's a joke. And it's not shocking when it happens, because it's been happening for the better part of a calendar year now.
Yeah, we're 10 games in. It's a very, very, very small sample size. But the issue is these 10 games just feel a lot like what was happening in the second half of last year. And I'll say it again, since that 17-5 beatdown in the Bronx, the Orioles are 46-52. And a lot of what we're talking about is similar to what we were talking about last year. And the fact that this boom or bust offense and issues with the starting pitching. Heck, the bullpen outside of CNL Perez has been better than...
Bullpen's been really good, actually.
I will say this, though.
They don't have a closer, and they haven't played any close games. No. So we're saying the bullpen's
We haven't seen a save situation.
Wait till we get to leverage situations, because they don't have a closer.
Yeah, we have not seen a single save situation. But it's just... Friday night, to me, definitely really frustrated me. And in a weird way, almost even more so than yesterday. And yesterday was really sloppy, too.
They both frustrated me, Bone, and for the similar reasons. Like, Friday night, Heston Kerstedt loses what should be the third out of the inning. And then they end up scoring runs. And then yesterday, Bobby Witt hits a ball that's got to be caught. And Jorge Mateo... seems to have as much use for a glove on his hand as I do, and he lets that drop, and somehow it's a triple, I guess, because it should be a three base error. And now you've got a young pitcher on the mound who's still learning his way, who ends up falling apart for a minute in that inning, and in an inning he should have been clean.
Most of the damage is done by a double, air quotes, that had an expected batting average of 130. But if you hit it to O'Neill enough, good things are going to happen.
Yeah,
we found that out, and they're dead set on running O'Neill out there. And I don't care that Kowser got hurt; it's the major leagues. You give a guy $17 million, you're going to put him out there in the outfield every day. You better know what the hell he's doing. This guy doesn't know what he's doing.
It's disappointing because that guy won a gold glove at a point in time.
Ramon won a gold glove at third years ago. Like, 2-3 years ago, age fast.
But 2-3 years ago, Cedric Mullins had a 30-30 year, and you bring that up all the time.
Well, because when nobody else is hitting, give him a chance.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I don't bring it up when they're crushing it. I bring it up because it's been a horse bleep lineup since last June.
No, I'm just
saying. And he was the only guy hitting in the playoffs, and he's top 30 in Major League Baseball against right-handed batters in his home ballpark over a calendar year, and they're batting him eighth because he's not a glory boy.
He's not one of their guys.
No.
No.
They treat him as such.
Yes, they do.
But look, Friday, Paul O'Neill, not sly. Paul O'Neill. I wish it was Paul O'Neill. My God. And I hated Paul O'Neill.
But you respected him.
But Paul O'Neill would have slid and made sure he scored that run.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have ended the inning.
Or he'd have run over the catcher. There you go. That existed then.
That can't happen. CNL Perez out there for, it would have been 100 pitches if that's what it took. Like, that can't happen.
And
that's below grade.
The white flag,
it's below grade.
They were down one. Heading into, like, what? I still will never understand that. Why wave the white flag and just let him get his brain beat?
CNL Perez threw 37 pitches.
It's insane. The velocity was down. He didn't look right. You knew that immediately.
Ben McDonald said, I think a batter in, he doesn't look comfortable. And yet he ended up throwing 37 pitches.
I was squirming watching that. Like, I'm like, is this guy gonna leave the mound grabbing his arm? Like, I'm
surprised he's not on the IL.
I thought, come on, we're a week into the season and we don't have another option. That's impossible. And if that's what they built, it's a bigger failure than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I think they decided once
we're playing for the next day.
Yeah.
Well, to Bone's point, the game was it got out of hand.
One run game heading into.
Yes, they
one run.
They were asleep at the switch of getting somebody up, and by the time they thought about it, it was over. So they're like, this guy's going to eat it.
No one's up. No one's up.
Yeah, I know. Well, it became pretty clear. I'm not agreeing with them. Yeah. I just like that this kid, that CNL's going to eat this.
Right,
and by the way, CNL didn't look great the second half of last year.
No. He's been up and down.
If I was taking a shot, I'd take a shot on Webb or I'd take a shot on Coulomb, and I haven't looked at Coulomb lately in Minnesota, before I gave CNL Perez the money they gave him, because I'm starting to think regression's real, and he's not as pitch efficient as he needs to be.
But
he hadn't given up a home run in forever, but now he's done that.
But he's another guy. 2022, he was phenomenal. He was arguably their best relief arm, but since then, it's been up and down.
Bullpens are schizophrenic by nature. Like, you can't expect guys to be good.
And their response to that was Kittredge.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And that's already sunk cost.
Well, he could be back in June, Jason.
He could. But yeah, the quality of the baseball needs to improve. But again, I look at how much of this is baked in the cake. Like the second baseman still hasn't played that much second base, and they like to yank him out of the lineup if there happens to be a lefty. Like the Heston Kjerstad part of it, though, he could never catch the ball in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed a lot of time. And I get it. Somebody has to play there. But like, he's 26, 27. You couldn't develop into a guy who can at least just catch the ball, let he catch a routine fly ball. Now, I told how many times did I go to a minor league game and say, whoa, my God, it's still not any better. Like, this guy, you better not do it. Like, I get it. You're probably going to do it, but you better not do it. But like, they're player development maestros. He's the second overall pick in a draft as a corner outfielder.
For his bat, Jason.
That's fine. I'm just talking about, can't he just be what Santander was defensively? Like, I'm not saying he's got to be what Austin Hayes was before his body started breaking down. Yeah. I'm just saying,
catch the balls near you.
How could you not? What's going on?
Yeah. He doesn't have the instincts to play defense.
And if that's the case, you should have turned him into a first baseman.
Yeah. Well, they got another guy that should have turned into first baseman sitting in Norfolk right now.
And he's still playing some third. And yes. So I'm just telling you, when he gets here and he's not ready to play any position at the major league level, it's not a quirk. It's not a coinkydink. It's who they are.
When we come back, we're going to check out what's going on in the rest of Major League Baseball. Corbin Burnes getting off to a rough start in his new home. We'll update you there. Plus, the Yankees, what went on against the Pirates this weekend? It's our Twib Notes.
Oh, and Vladdy's not going away.
And Vladdy will be in Toronto for a while. We'll explain. Twib Notes next year on The Fan. Masson on the call for at least one more year. Nathaniel Lowe, RBI double off Corbin Burnes. Corbin Burnes has made two starts. He's 0-1 with a 5.79 ERA, a 1.93 whip. He gave up 4 earned in 5 innings, getting the loss against the Nats.
Jason, that cutter is getting hammered. 750 slug off the cutter.
It's like August all over.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, defending him, he went there to pitch in Arizona, and so far he's pitched in the Bronx.
That's
in Washington.
True.
You know what I mean? So really,
very good point.
He really only wants to be in that dome in Arizona near his house. Maybe he could work it out with Boris where he doesn't have to go on road trips.
Orioles
or if the
will
team
miss
goes
him.
East, I stay back.
Yeah, he pitched Sunday, so the Orioles will miss him.
Orioles will miss him.
Yeah.
But they'll get plenty of good arms.
Oh, yeah. They get Gallen tonight.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. They get Fott, probably. No Jordan Montgomery.
Fott's been... Eduardo's been... But he's coming back from a long injury.
Yeah.
Merrill Kelly, pretty
Merrill
good.
Merrill Kelly can pitch.
Merrill Kelly's tomorrow. Yeah.
Did Gallen? I think Gallen might have struck out 13 in his first start. I think he struck out 13.
It's probably Ben's giving you a thumb. Second start, Yankees.
It's going to be a tough one tonight. I think Arizona's a really good ball club.
Yes.
I think Corbin Burnes will be fine. The Ketel Marte injury, he was off to a nice start.
Probably miss a month with that.
That hurts them a little bit. Suarez is destroying everything he sees right now. I'm going to be real interested to see how they pitch to Eugenio Suarez in this series. They're also a really athletic team. Corbin Carroll looks much healthier than when we saw these guys last year. He's hitting home runs. And if I recall, the last time these teams faced each other, they ran wild on Orioles catchers. And I think that's probably going to be the scouting report.
Programming note, their assistant GM, Emil Salde, is going to join us tomorrow at 2:30. Go ahead, Bob.
Local guy.
Yes, yeah. Pikesville High.
But Zach Eflin's on the mound tonight.
Yep.
So hopefully he can provide them some length, and he obviously has been their most consistent starter.
He's been great.
But they need to score tonight. They need the feast part, not the famine part, offensively.
Let's go to the Yankees, who finished up a 3-game series against the Pirates in Pittsburgh over the weekend. An old friend, Tommy Pham.
They got Tommy Phammed.
And this will walk it off. Tommy Pham to deep left field, and Rays the Jolly Roger. Tommy Pham wins it.
Tommy Pham with the walk-off. The Pirates were up 4-1 heading into the ninth. The Yankees scored 3 to tie it, but the Pirates...
The Yankees had ducks on the pond there and could have taken the lead, and I think it was Goldschmidt got out at the end there. The Pirates not a very good team. I thought the Yankees would probably sweep them. You can't win them all. Will Warren, another kind of iffy start for them. It was Carrasco today, and they're playing the Tigers right now, and he's gotten hit a little bit. They're starting pitching is Nothing special.
Rodon today for
Rodon. Oh, it might be Carrasco tomorrow. Tomorrow's a day game. Carrasco against Skubal.
Yeah.
So Yankees might be running into a little bit of a losing skid here. And they've got issues. Their bullpen hasn't been awesome. And the starting pitching isn't great.
They're playing all day games in Detroit because of the weather.
The weather, yeah. And it was flurrying there a minute ago. But again, will the Orioles capitalize?
This Yankees
team to me is like a, as presently constructed, is like a 90-win team. I don't think it's much more than that.
That's what makes the lack of aggressiveness, the no aggressiveness in the offseason that much more frustrating.
You know, it was aggressive overnight.
Tyler O'Neill had a bunch of great Tim Horton donuts in Toronto. So there's that.
And he's hitting.
Yeah.
Vlad Guerrero Jr.
How about that?
What's 14 years, 500 million?
500.
Yeah. Half a bill.
So what is it? What do you think Gunnar Henderson's worth?
Six.
If this guy who gives you nothing defensively is worth that.
By the way, no deferrals, all guaranteed.
Yeah, this is real.
How much does Vlad weigh in 5 years?
Oh, man. I don't know about that. Come on.
He gets a little
chunky. But then he usually gets it back, reins it back in.
Well, he's looking for a contract.
I tell you,
now he's got a contract.
He loves to hit in Fenway Park. Old friend Easton Lucas on the mound for the for Toronto, who has no bullpen, and Richard Fitz for the Red Sox. I am on the over in that game, and I think Vladdy will tear it up tonight. I mean, look. We made a lot of fun on Toronto on this show, rightfully so.
Yes.
For how they probably missed their window, and there's no way they're keeping Bichette and Vladdy, and they should have fired their skipper again, and their culture's warped, and they only beat bad teams, and they don't win in the division, and they love finishing second and third for everybody, Otani and whoever else. But like, this is a big deal.
Huge deal. I didn't think they kept someone. I was pretty shocked.
Especially when he's this close to walking.
Morning. Oh, for sure. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he cut off talks, air quotes,
he publicly did, but I guess privately they were close enough that they just kept kind of going.
If you say we're willing to give you a half a bill.
Yeah, I mean, you change your.
My busy signal is now no longer there. My secretary is now in. You will not get a busy signal anymore.
Yeah.
And she will forward all your calls directly to me, even if I'm in the on deck circle.
You might have said you don't want to talk. They say half a billion. You go Scooby Doo.
I'm just saying. So that's a real commitment. We can talk about Rogers communication and they're cheap and they're on the cheap. So they did that. I'm old enough to remember the Tampa Bay Rays getting a deal done with Wander Franco before all that stuff went down, right?
Now they failed.
We know that the Red Sox are back. They're signing everybody. And the Yankees aren't going to be George Steinbrenner's Yankees, but
they are compared to the Orioles.
Yes. So that's what we're up against. The price keeps going up. We'll see if they step up.
Keep seeing extensions get done.
Yeah, everywhere.
Not in Baltimore.
Everywhere.
Not in Baltimore.
It seems to be a pandemic of extensions around baseball, except here in Baltimore where they got the vaccine.
I would say the pandemic's here.
What's happening
out there is a very healthy diet.
Robust.
It's a healthy diet that's become like the sweeping the nation. It's a health crave that's good for you. That's sweeping the nation. We've got the pandemic here.
Coming up next, we stick with Orioles baseball. By the way, Jonas Schaefer.
We don't pay anybody.
Yeah. Jonas Schaefer's going to join us in 5 to talk some Ravens. But all the young dudes, and we'll look back at the weekend that was by the starting rotation. Young guys, not so much, but was it their fault? And one of the old guys, he stepped up. That's next here on The Fan.
Just thought he looked way more comfortable today. I thought he was probably a little nervous that first start in Toronto, but just really good command like he had in spring training of all of his pitches. Really good split. Fastball command was there. All pitches. Being able to throw anything in any count, keep guys off balance. Thought he was absolutely outstanding today.
So that's Brandon Hyde talking about Tomoyuki Sugano, and he may not be a young dude, but he's in his infancy as a Major League Baseball player. Second start, much better than the first.
Grew up right before our eyes. It was a great start. It was just across the board different from the first, just in terms of his comfort level, from the way he presented himself, to use a Buck term.
He flashed his whole arsenal in a clean first inning. Remember, he walked the first couple guys he faced against Toronto. He was perpetually sort of jittery. He only got 5 swing and miss in the first outing. He got 10 in this one. I thought he played his four-seamer off his other 5 pitches really well. 64% called strike and whiff rate on the four-seamer. He threw it 14 times. 1 of 6 pitches he threw at least 10 times. They chased. That's not a team that swings and misses a ton. They tend to put the ball in play. And the Royals chased his four-seamer 60% of the time. They swung at pitches outside the zone against that four-seamer. And he got a lot of swing and miss outside the zone on the sweeper as well. Thought the sweeper was a really effective pitch for him. He's not a big strikeout guy, but picked up a swing and miss strikeout on the sweeper. And the splitter the first 4 innings I thought was absolutely devastating. And they were chasing it even when it spiked in front of the plate. They had a hard time, I guess, picking it up, seeing it, adjusting to it. Now, they started spitting on it more in the 5th and the 6th inning, and it led to some balls and 3 ball counts and ended up getting them out of there. But yeah, I mean, you could see the cerebral side of him, and you could see him being a guy who knows what he is and knows what he isn't. And it was super impressive.
Yeah, the control was on point, and it has to be on point in order for him to be successful, because he's not going to overpower anybody. He retired the first 8 batters that he faced. He pounded the strike zone. First inning alone, 12 of the 14 pitches were strikes. He walked the first batter of his career on 4 pitches. I really think
his first 6 pitches in Toronto were balls. Yes, and none of them were particularly close.
Getting that debut out of the way, I think, was big. You heard Brandon Hyde coming in, thought that the nerves got the best of him in that first start. Now you're hoping he can build off this second one.
Let's get to the younger guys. Dean Kramer's been here for a little bit, and Cade Povich in his second year in the major leagues, as he made his debut a year ago. Both guys, their lines don't look great, but both guys deserved a hell of a lot better than they got from their defense.
Yeah, I feel for both of them. Both could have provided a little, certainly more length, and had a better stat line if the defense was even double A caliber, but it wasn't for a lot of this series, and it's not far too often. It started in the first inning for Kramer, and he's battling the elements, and it's hard to get a grip on the ball, and it's misty and cold. And when you induce a pop out that should be caught in a high school game and it's dropped for runs, it's hard to just shake that off. And for the most part he did, but you know, there was a cavalcade of errors to come, and you know, guys not knowing when to slide at home plate. Like, it's just below grade. So I think it's hard to really evaluate him, but I thought he had pretty decent stuff. And then Povich, you can look at it and say 13 hits, but I mean, like, 4 of those balls should have been caught. And I'm not saying it's ideal, but this kid's really struggled to pitch on the road, and he gives up contact, and that's a huge ballpark with a lot of ground to cover, and he had a beer league softball team defending behind him. So I thought, all things considered, you can say 4 runs. I mean, I don't know. Maybe 1 or 2. I mean, there's a triple that's ruled a triple that should have been caught by the center fielder.
Yeah.
There's a 2-run scoring double that had an expected batting average of 130. I mean, major league teams catch that ball. And he still battled. And when he got in trouble, he's got swing and miss stuff to get himself out of it, which not a lot of people on this staff have.
Maybe this is me looking too much glass half full when it comes to Cade Povich. I thought that was a big step in his maturation process. The fact that he was able to complete 6 innings, where we saw last year, especially when he first got brought up, if things weren't going well early on, like
especially
that first
on
inning,
the road,
on the road where he gives up 3 earned runs, and get it, it wasn't all his fault with Jorge Mateo missing what should be a routine flyout. For him to settle in and go 6 innings, and in a weird way, despite giving up the 13 hits, still be decently pitch efficient in 88 pitches through 6, I thought that was pretty good for him.
They needed the 6 innings.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a...
Yes.
They don't have a...
He's the only other starter to complete 6, besides Eflin.
And they don't have really bridge guys. And Aiken has pitched a fair amount already, and Suarez is out. So, no, I thought he battled, and I thought he kept his composure despite them doing goofy defensive things behind him. And the road has been a real problem for him. And so, Yeah. And look, he knew the margin for error is slim because he's watching Chris Bubich on the other side look like Cy Young against these guys because, he throws from the left side. So I was impressed with Slim. Now, I'm a Slim guy. You could say I've got a bias, whatever.
That's fair.
But no, I think this kid belongs in the major leagues.
It's just, it was a shame that on both Friday and Sunday, the pitcher should have gotten out of the first inning clean. And because of something that beyond his control, they both did not get out of the first inning clean.
And this is not a team that plays with a whole lot of verve in life when they're behind early. So it just becomes, everything gets compounded because they don't put up a lot of crooked numbers. And the offense is very sort of scattershot. And so you feel like you're fighting for your life out there, that a 2 or 3 run deficit is, you know, is a death sentence.
We have the Oriole lineup early.
Oh!
If we want it.
I would love that.
Want it right
Bring
now.
It on, Bone.
Okay. Tyler O'Neill.
We have a poll, too.
Tyler O'Neill getting a day off.
Boy, you don't want him out there in that big outfield tonight? Come on.
Gunnar Henderson leading off at short. Adley Rutschman. Catcher batting second, Ryan O'Hearn in right field batting third. Jordan Westberg is the DH batting cleanup. Seti back in the lineup batting fifth in center field. Ryan Mountcastle first base batting sixth. Heston Kerstad in left batting seventh. Ramon Urias third base batting eighth. And Jackson Holliday second base batting ninth.
So Kerstad's in left and O'Hearn's in right.
And the poll that Jason mentioned, IA1057 The Fan is how you can vote on this poll. Every poll, more bad ball from the Orioles picking up where they left off in the second half of last season. Same problems from bad at-bats to throwing to the wrong base. So, Birdlamb, what's your biggest issue thus far? 35.8% bad lineup slash management. 22.4% bad fielding fundamentals. 21.2% feast or famine offense. 20.6% poor starting pitching.
It's pretty even spread.
Yeah, very.
Well, there's it's again, small sample, but there's been a little bit of everything so far.
But again, to people who want to act like these are new developments, I would say you haven't paid much attention to this team since, like, I can remember that series with the Cubs last year. I think that was in June. This started settling in around Memorial Day last year. You could see their play slipping, and they haven't put it back together.
Coming up next, if you missed, we had Harry Geller on the show earlier. He's founder of Turtle NIL. He's on the board of directors at Maryland. He's a part-time professor, heavily involved with Maryland athletics. He joined us at 2:30. You're going to want to hear what he had to say about Kevin Willard and him leaving, what he had to say about Damon Evans, and you're going to hear it next here on The Fan. Earlier in the show, we were joined by Harry Geller. He's the founder of Turtle NIL. He is also on the Board of Trustees at Maryland. Maryland grad, part-time business professor there, and he's a guy who has his finger on the pulse of what's going on in Maryland athletics, especially with the men's basketball program. So with that in mind, we earlier asked him about Kevin Willard and him never being happy.
Kevin was never really happy at Maryland, in my opinion. You would, you know, need to talk to him about whether he thinks that's true or not. He really always felt that he didn't get the support he needed from the athletic department. Even, you know, from the beginning, from year one, he would always comment to me, boy, this athletic department really doesn't care much about basketball. And that, you know, he had a great year this year, but as it sort of leaked out about the contract renegotiation, and then maybe he was talking to Villanova, then it kind of snowballed and all made sense to me. You know, but I think really from the beginning, I don't think he was completely happy here. And then, you know, slightly in his defense, sometimes you take jobs that you're just not happy with, and that could be the case there.
He feels like...
Wasn't happy from the jump?
No, he does not feel like he was happy from the jump. Now, he says he probably would never admit it, but that's his reading. If anybody knows, it's him.
So he's good friends with him.
Well, he's also good friends with Mick Cronin, and that sounds like perpetually angry Mick Cronin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great to hear.
Makes you happier he's gone, too.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you wonder if he begrudgingly did a contract extension here and then they had not a great year in the portal or whatever. Although, look, it couldn't have ended any uglier than it did.
Mm-hmm.
That to upstage and kind of throw all those kids under the bus the way he did is pathetic.
Clearly, it was a boiling point for him, and he chose to unleash on the program prior to the most anticipated NCAA tournament in 10 years. And it had been going on for a while. I remember him saying, even prior to this season even beginning, him bemoaning the fact that he didn't have much NIL to play with.
He hated Damon Evans.
In his second season. Well, yes. That and
great segue, Jason. Damon Evans.
That's why I'm here.
Former AD.
Sipping my tea.
Here at Maryland, now at SMU. Harry Geller on Damon Evans.
Well, he kind of abruptly left. I'm not that close with Damon. I didn't expect it. I was kind of shocked to hear about it. And, I think Damon's always been a more football-centric. You know, he played college football. He came from Georgia. You know, maybe he thought Maryland didn't have enough resources ever to compete, you know, with Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State. And, you know, SMU has unlimited dollars. I don't blame him for taking the job. I think, yeah, he caused a lot of the issues with Kevin, with the animus towards that, and, you know, kind of left. I think when he left, and then, you know, Kevin had to deal with the next person involved, I think that probably set him off a little bit. And at that point, I think it was too far gone for him ever to come back, if he ever was planning to.
Colleen Sorum is the next person involved, who is the current interim AD. I did get a text. I didn't catch it in the moment, but somebody who knows Maryland pretty well texted me while he was talking and said, all you need to know about Damon Evans is Harry Geller said I wasn't close with Damon Evans. And why wouldn't you be close with Harry Geller if you're the AD at Maryland?
Yeah. Look, I think in hindsight, we're going to say this is addition by subtraction. Again, the circumstances and the way and the timing it went down and these things being happening consecutively or concurrently, far from ideal. And it I'm not going to sit here and try to put lipstick on a pig, because that was a pig. But both these guys clearly had sort of stars in their eyes. And I think they hated working with each other. And I think Damon Evans probably saw that, as much as I tried to build this thing up with football. And look, I think this kid Malik's going to be special. And I'm not saying that the Terps program can't get better, but I think Damon Evans saw that his fight to keep football on equal standing.
SMU made the playoffs last year.
Right. Wasn't going to work out no matter who the new basketball coach was. But listening to him talk about Willard, there's a part of me that thinks, as soon as Willard saw how good Derek Queen was and how good this team might be, that in October he was on the phone with Jimmy Sexton saying, hey, bro, I'm out of here no matter what. We're going to use this. I got a great team. I'm going to squeeze the hell out of it. But you better have some options for me come, the Sweet 16. Because this team's going to the Sweet 16, and I don't want to re-up here. I think he knew that way back then.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. But what's interesting about the animosity between Damon and Will, Damon hired him. And this clearly dissolved that relationship so quickly.
I don't think Kevin Willard's an easy guy.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think Villanova's going to find that out pretty fast. I don't think he's easy to deal with.
Well, and again, we didn't get a direct answer on this, and Harry himself, I mean, it's early in the process, probably doesn't know, but I came away fairly convinced that the new AD does not currently reside in College Park.
Yeah, that's my read as well.
Which I think has to be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a reboot. It's not just hiring a new basketball coach.
No.
This is hopefully a reboot that lasts a decade or longer.
Yes. Coming up next, we get to the Ravens. And we asked a question amongst ourselves earlier. Can the Ravens expect anything at all from David Ajabo in year 4? Well, we'll ask that and more of Jonas Schaefer, covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. He joins us next here on The Fan.